So we got up to Daf Chav Gimel Amid Beis, and we're trying to work through the sugya of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir in our Mishnah gives the litigants an amazing veto power to declare that the dayonim that were, let's say, presented by the other baldin are psulim, or the Eidim that were brought by the other Baldin of Sulin. And the Gemara says, Pe Kodosh, how could such a holy mouth like Rabbi Meir say such a thing? Because unless the litigant has objective evidence to disqualify the Dayan or to disqualify the Eidim, how could he possibly be believed? And the Gemara, just to summarize, suggested that in the case of Dayanim, we're talking about Beit Din Shebesuria. That was Rabbi Yochanan's insight. And in that particular location in the world, it was quite common that in those courts in Syria, Rachos Shebesuria, the Dayanim were not up to par, shall we say. They weren't Bekiyim Bedin, and therefore the litigant has a right to say that I know that this a candidate which was presented by my Baal Din, my colleague here, is not he's not a Baki Bedin. Then the Gemara goes on to ask, okay, fine. You're telling me that under certain circumstances the Baal Din, even according to Rabbi Meir, would not be able to disqualify the judges. Let's say, for example, not in the case of Archos HaBesuria, let's say a normal situation in which various individuals have reputations, they have records in which in the past they've served as Dayanim, and therefore they have what we would call a Cheskes Kashrus, and we assume that they're Ksherim. So what? In such a case, Rabbi Meir would agree that you would not be able to passel the Dayan? And the Gemara brings various rayos and brisos to prove that even in a case of outside of Archos Shebesuria, where the Dayanim have a track record as being Ksherim, and they functioned in the past as Dayanim, nevertheless, the Rabbi Meir allows the litigant, the other litigant, to disqualify the candidate of the Baal Din Shekenegdo. And how is that possible? So the Gemara now comes up with a whole new interpretation of what the Mishnah, what Rabbi Meir meant when he said that he could disqualify the Dayanim. And the Gemara says that the machlokas here, the issue between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, is about what we call Neman Olai Abba, or Neman Olai Avicha. When a litigant makes a declaration that he will accept a judge who is not kosher, like, for example, Abba, he's a relative and he cannot judge for his own son. And the judge who's a karo of his posel. But nevertheless, there's halacha, which is in a Mishnah later on, a Daf Chav Dalet, that the two litigants, if they agree to accept so-and-so as their judge, even though he is technically posel, he's disqualified because he's Abba, then they can accept such a person. And that person, even though, again, technically he's posel, becomes the dayan. Now the issue is, what happens if after the litigant has already declared his, so to speak, commitment to accept this person who's disqualified as a judge, now he wants to change his mind? So Rabbi Meir is the one who says, Yochalatzimbo. You know, it's true that at some point he'd accepted this dayan as a judge, But now he changed his mind, and he can rescind his original declaration, and it's no longer binding, which means that basically the litigant is going to have to present someone else, a different candidate. And the Chachamim say, "Ein yochel lachzor bo." Chachamim have a rule that once you've committed yourself by declaring Nemen Olai Ava, then that's a commitment that's engraved in stone, and you cannot retract that agreement. It's a kabbalah, and there's no chazara. Now, if that be the case, the Gemara says, can we apply a similar kind of logic to the case of Eidim? And what that would mean is that, let's say, a litigant would agree, and he would declare his agreement, that one witness, which normally the Torah would not rely upon, is acceptable. And in a sense, the litigant, will call him Shimon, challenges Reuven, and he says to him, "Look, Mr. Reuven, if you could come up with one single witness to testify that I owe you the 1,000, then I'll accept that witness as if he was two witnesses." So just like in the case of Dayanim, where Rabbi Meir says that if the litigant declares Nemen Olai Abba, I accept my father as a judge, and here we're going to have Machlokes between Rabbi Meir and Chacham, can he change his mind later on? So too, in a case of one witness, if the litigant says, Nemen Olai Kibetre, I accept one witness as if he were two witnesses, can he change his mind later on and say, I rescind my original declaration and my original commitment? And the Gemara points out that we have two different chidushim, and we need both of them. One is a chiddush for the chachamim, and one is a chiddush for the sheet of Rabbi Meir. When we talk about the chachamim, so we need a chiddush in the case of an eid. Why? Because you would have thought. I'm sorry, the other way around. If you go like the Chacham, you need a chiddush in the case of Dayanim, of a Dayan. Why? Because you would have thought in the case of an aid, then the... Just one second, let me just get the mathematics here. Again, if I only had the case of Dayanim, I would have said... Oh, correct. So I need the chiddush in the case of the aid, like I said originally. Why? Because if I only had the case of Dayanim, I would say that according to the Chachamim, the reason why Eino Yochel Lachzor, but once he made the declaration, Nemen Olai Abba, he cannot be Chozer, is because Abba is Kosher, he's Roy, he's Chozi li Dayanus, but Bakom Acher, Bialma. In other words, in this case, for technical reasons, since he's related to the Baldin, therefore he's disqualified. But as a person, he can judge in nine out of 10 other cases, right? In 99 out of 100 cases, etc., etc. So therefore, in the case of Eid Echad, maybe the Chachamim... But in the case of Eid Echad, where an Eid Echad is not acceptable in any court case for monetary law, because the Torah says, Al Pishnayim, there, maybe the Chachamim would be moded to Rabbi Meir, that Enochinami, his original declaration is not sketched in stone. You know, it can be rescinded. No, Kamash Malon, that even in the case of Eid Echad, once he made the commitment that he will accept the testimony of one aid, then he cannot rescind. He cannot revoke his original agreement. Now we go to Rabbi Meir, and now we have a chiddush of Rabbi Meir that Yochel Lachzor, even in the case of Nemen Olai Abba, in the case of Eid Echad, Rabbi Meir would say he can change his mind because one aid is not reliable in any case. But in a Nemen Olai Abba situation where the father is Roy, Leo's dying, just as a technical psul, and we can overcome and bridge that technical psul when he declares Nemen Olai Abba, I accept my father as a judge. Here in this context, I don't know. Maybe Rabbi Meir would agree to the Chachamim that once he said Nemen Olai Abba as a Dayan, he can no longer rescind that agreement. Kamash Malon, and therefore we need that Chiddush that even in the case of a Dayan, of a father who's Pasul Adun, Rabbi Meir still holds that he can change his mind and he can rescind his original statement. the Gemara has a problem, because everything that we've been discussing now assumes that Rabbi Meir was addressing a case where the other Baal Din brought only one witness. And the question was, if the Baal Din originally accepted that one witness and committed himself and then he changed his mind. But in fact, the Mishnah uses the term a dove, which means that there were two witnesses. And if there were two witnesses, how could Rav Meir possibly say that he disqualifies the testimony of two witnesses? So here's where the Gemara introduces Rav Elazar. So if you have Daf Chaf Gimel Amud Beis, let's just review what we started yesterday, but we didn't finish, and that's Rav Elazar.
We didn't do Reish Lakish.
Again, Reish Lakish was rejected. Reish Lakish was assuming that Rabbi Meir allows the litigant to reject one witness. And the Gemara asked, well, what do you mean one witness? The Torah rejects one witness. But the answer is that he had accepted that witness as two witnesses, and now he changed his mind. So the Gemara says that can't be pshat, because the Mishnah says a dove in the plural. And enter stage now would be Rabbi Elazar. So if you're on Daf Chav Gimel Amud Beis, you would count down approximately 12 lines, I'm just guessing, from the top of the Amud. And the first word of the line is Elazar. And Rabbi Elazar says, "Bibahu v'acher leposlan," that the case is Enochinami, the first litigant, we'll call him Reuven, brought two witnesses into the court. And now Shimon, the second litigant, we'll call him the defendant, he testifies together with another witness from the world that these two witnesses that were brought by Reuven, by the first litigant, we'll call him the plaintiff, Reuven, are psulim. So the Gemara says, kol kamine means, I still don't understand Rabbi Meir. How could he, the Baal Din, we'll call him the defendant, be mitztaref, be connected to the other aid and form a unit of edus, no gambi edusohu? He's telling us now that these two witnesses that are testifying against him to the effect that he has to pay $1,000 are disqualified. Well, that's called an ogavi edus. An ogavi edus means that a person is not believed to testify on his own behalf. Witnesses can testify on behalf of someone else, but not if you're on trial. So now two witnesses are coming to testify against Shimon that he's chayav $1,000 to Reuven. Now Shimon wants to disqualify them. What power does Shimon have to disqualify them? Of course, we've made a little bit of progress according to Rabbi Elazar, because it's not just Shimon alone. Shimon has another buddy here. But still, you need two witnesses, and one of those two witnesses is the litigant himself, who obviously has vested interests here. He's an ogev edus in disqualifying those two edus who are testifying against him in a court of law.
In a court of Jewish law, a defendant can never defend himself.
He can defend himself, but he cannot testify. Now, in order to disqualify two witnesses, you have to have testimony. You have to testify that they stole, or they ate chazer, or whatever they're guilty of. And if these two witnesses, in this case, are testifying against Shimon, Shimon can't be a witness against the two witnesses. He can claim he has other witnesses, he can claim he has a shtar, he has a chazok, or whatever proof and evidence he can deduce. But to testify against two witnesses, he's an ogavi edus. I mean, after all, he's trying to spare himself the thrust and the implications of this edus against him. So he says, these edim are psulim. Shkoyach, very nice, but you're an ogavi edus. That testimony we cannot accept. So the Gemara answers, Omer av acha bereder av ika kigon shekara olav arar. That he's testifying, meaning he is Shimon, right? The litigant, the defendant, as we called him. That we have some sort of a, what's called a psul, a shemetz psul. There's some sort of a you know the phrase in English where there's smoke, there's fire. There's some sort of smoke over here about these two witnesses. And the litigant is coming to verify, or shall I say, to substantiate that rumor that's going around. Now, yesterday I failed to read a footnote here on the words Kigon Shekarolov Iris Arar. So I'd like to fill in this footnote that I omitted yesterday. Klomar, he says. Hagemara, b'kushasai sasvur shubol lefosla machmas kurva. Initially, the Gemara thought that the litigant, that's the defendant Reuven, together with some other Shimon, together with some other witnesses, saying about Reuven's witnesses that they are related. V'im Cain, they don't have. In other words, the litigant cannot be part of that unit of Eidus to create a psul. Now, that psul is only relevant to this particular case because what Shimon is testifying is that these Eidim are related to us, to one of the Bali Dinim, or they relate to each other. It's only relevant to this particular case. And if it's only related to this particular case, then clearly the litigant has vested interest here. He's an Ogeh B'Eidus. We cannot accept his testimony against these two Eidim that they are Krovim. V'tirtza Gemara, but Gemara answers, Shekarolera Arar, Klomar, Ratzahu Leposo Lekola Olam. The issue about these two Eidim is not specifically related in a limited way to this particular case, but rather to the status of the Eidim for the entire world, for any kind of testimony. Why? Because there's some psul in the Eidim, which we'll see exactly what that psul is in a minute, but that psul is a status change in the Eidim, that they are disqualified for any testimony, not because they're related in this particular case. So again, if the litigant, if Shimon is testifying that these Eidim are Krovim in this particular case, and therefore they're disqualified, then clearly Shimon is an Ogeh B'Eidus. But if on the other hand, Shimon is coming together with another buddy to testify about these two witnesses that they are apostle for the entire world, they can never be accepted, and their status is that of Psulim, so then that testimony that these Eidim are psulim is not relevant specifically and singularly to this particular case. It's related to the status of these two people as far as Eidim v'yesh lomar, and the Gemara thinks now she'eino nogea v'yeduso. That's not called nogea. Kevin she'eino poslo ach v'vak legabi din zesh lefanenu. They're not coming to disqualify the Eidim about this particular case. El made al mahuso, which I think means the status of the aid, shepasul hu lechal edus. Do you follow the difference? Let me go over that one more time. In the Habamina, the Gemara thought that the litigant is testifying about these witnesses that they are related, and they can't testify, they're disqualified for this particular testimony. He's not saying anything about the inherent status of these Eidim, of these two individuals as witnesses in general. Are they not reliable, and where they have no credibility, and so forth and so on? They're thieves and they're cheats. He's testifying about their relationship to this particular case, that they have to be removed from this case because they are related to whatever they're related to. And again, there are many different possibilities. No, so in that case, correction. So in that Havamina, where they're testifying that these Eidim are psulim, then the litigant is called Nogea B'dover. Why? Because he's basically saying that these Eidim are kosher Eidim in general, but they are disqualified for this particular case. Well, then he has clearly vested interest because he doesn't want testimony against him in this particular case. The Gemara's answer is Kigon Shekara Lov Arar. What these Eidim are coming to testify is about the status of these witnesses in general, above and beyond this case. Now they're testifying not in relationship to this case, they're testifying in relationship to these witnesses. So the Gemara asks, "Ara demar demai? What is the detrimental disqualification here in terms of the status of these two witnesses? Elam, if you're going to tell me, ara de gazlanusa, that they are testifying against these two witnesses, that they are thieves, is kol kamine? Does the litigant himself have the qualification to testify that these two witnesses are thieves? No gabe do so who? The Gemara thinks that they still, or he stills, we'll talk about Shimon, the litigant, he still, nevertheless, even in the case of Arar de Gazlanusa, has the status of no gabe edus. Why? Because since, as a result of their, of when I say their testimony, I mean the litigant, Shimon, and another witness, these two witnesses will not be able to testify against this litigant, and therefore the other litigant will not be able to prove his case with valid evidence against Shimon. No, it's Reuven will be at a loss here. He won't have any evidence to testify against Shimon. Why? Because he subpoenaed two witnesses into the court, and now we're determining that these that these two witnesses are gazlanim, that they're thieves. Hence, Reuven is now out in the cold, so to speak. He doesn't have two witnesses to rely on to testify against Shimon. So how could Shimon himself be the witness against, you know, a character witness against these two witnesses that were brought by Reuven in order to save himself? That means Shimon is going to now relieve himself of any evidence against him. Ella says the Gemara, this is where we finished yesterday, Arar de Pagam Mishpacha. The issue here is not about these witnesses whether they stole and they were guilty of gazlanus, but whether or not they come from a family which is possible. The family itself, the Mishpacha, is what's called the Mishpachas Avadim. Now for this we have to know a little bit more about the laws of Yuchsin. And basically, this is sugyas in Masechta Ksuvos, that if we have reason to believe that an Eved, now when we say an Eved, we're talking about a non-Jewish slave who has the status of an Eved Kanani, if he married into this family, or for example, a Shivcha married into this family, then the entire family now becomes suffix, becomes in doubt. We never know in any member of this family if that member of the family might not have possibly been born to this marriage, so to speak, between the Eved and one of the other Jewish members of the family. So that's called Psul Mishpacha. Now, there's a rumor going around that this Mishpacha, we'll call it Reuveni, okay, that in Mishpachas Reuveni there was some Eved or Shivcha that married into the family. Could have been 100 years ago, could have been 50 years ago, who knows when it was. Now, in our situation, Shimon, who's a Baldin, together with someone else from the Shuk, testifies against these two witnesses that, or maybe against one of the two witnesses, because that would be enough, that he comes from this kind of mishpacha, Reuveni. He comes from a mishpacha where we have rumors and reason to believe that an Eved somehow mixed into this family. And now we have a machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim as to whether or not we could believe Shimon to testify about these two witnesses, or one of these two witnesses, that he came from a mishpacha, we'll call it mishpacha X, Reuveni, where there was a chshash, a suspicion about the entire yuchsin, meaning the Jewish lineage was up in doubt here, of anyone coming from that family. Rabbi Meir Savar, Hani, these witnesses, one of which is Shimon the litigant, amishpacha kamishadeh, they are testifying about the Reuveni family. And they testify, and one of the two witnesses is the litigant himself, is Shimon himself, that we know that an Eved married into this family. Again, how they know that is going to be a matter of the sugya and ksubis today, and when they actually witness to the relationship between the Eved and one of the members of the Ruvaini family. I don't know exactly what they have to see in order to testify, but they testify that this family, the entire family, is in a suffix. We don't know exactly which member of the family married the Eved or married the Shivcha, and therefore all the children are now in that situation of a psul mishpacha. They are disqualified. Now that disqualification has tremendous ramifications in many different areas of halacha, one of which is testimony. Because let's say, for example, if you would have a Jewish man who has a relationship with a shivcha knanis, the child of such a relationship would not be qualified as an aid to testify, because of what's called psul mishpacha. And now the question is, would Shimon, who's a litigant in this case, he's the defendant, be qualified to testify against mishpacha X? We called it Ruveni, we just gave it a name, that this mishpacha had an admixture of an Eved or a Shivcha inside. And hence, these witnesses, or at least one of them, who we know comes from that mishpacha of Ruveni, is one of the descendants of Mishpachas HaRuveni, is now disqualified for testimony. Is the defendant, if he links up with someone else to testify against this mishpacha, is he now a noger b'edus? And Rabbi Meir says, no, he's not an Oger B'Edus. Why? Because he's not testifying about the qualifications of these individuals as Edim. He's not coming to disqualify them as Edim. He's coming to disqualify them in Hilchus Yuchsin, to say that they are not Miyuchasim. Miyuchasim means they come from pure Jewish lineage. The Ehu, and now this witness, who was brought by Reuven, the plaintiff, or both of these witnesses, memela kapasil. As a result of the fact that there's a psul yuchsin, there's a repercussion, an indirect spin-off, so to speak, that they cannot testify because they belong to a mishpacha she'ena miyuchesis, a mishpacha psula. But the testimony is not on the status of these witnesses. When Shimon testifies together with the Yankala, whoever it is, that we know about Mishpachas Ruveni, that there's an Eved mixed into that Mishpacha, they're not testifying about the qualification or lack thereof, or disqualification of these individuals as Edim. That's not what they're testifying. They're testifying about Yuchsin, about Mishpacha. Memela, as a result, that's what I call a spin-off, a long-range repercussion, these guys who belong to Mishpachas Ruveni are now disqualified for testimony. Rabbanan Savri, sof, no ge'er v'yedusohu. Even though Shimon is now testifying about these witnesses that they belong to a Mishpacha Psula, which has tremendous ramifications, but nevertheless he has vested interests here. Why? Because as a result of establishing that these witnesses belong to a mishpacha psula, their testimony against him is invalid. So he's really coming to defend himself and spare himself of this obligation to pay the money. Hence, he's an ogea b'edus. Is there anyone here who can summarize what we just said? What is the machlokas here between Rabbi Meir and Rabban? I'd be much happier if one of you gentlemen would offer to summarize this, and we're all amongst friends, so you don't have to be embarrassed about it.
Before anybody does that, could you explain the word kamisahadi?
Kamisahadi, they are testifying, right? Sahadusa is the noun, It means edus, testimony, and kamis hadi is a conjugated verb. In other words, when you take a noun like sahaduso or sadi and you conjugate it as kamis hadi, it becomes a verb. They testify. So what is the machlokas here between Rabbi Meir and Rabbanon?
So Rabbi Meir says that you're not making testimony directly against the witnesses, the litigant, the defendant, against the witnesses.
As what? As witnesses.
As witnesses. But you're really going one step removed from them, that their family really is not, because of questionable lineage, is not capable of being witnesses. So you're disqualifying that family, which is really removed from them. If you disqualify that family, if you'd done it a month ago, they couldn't have come as witnesses because everybody would have known they're not valid witnesses.
And therefore this says that the litigant is no Nogei Beidus, or he's not
Nogei Beidus? He's
not
Nogei Beidus. Because he's really one step removed from that. And the Chachamim are saying that no, really the fact that he's testifying even removed from that, he's getting the benefit of doing that, so he still has his vestige, still no gea, because he's going to win his case because of his testimony. So it's too late to puzzle those witnesses.
Excellent. Now, I have a note here which goes into a whole analysis of why Rabbi Meir holds what he holds, why Rabbanan holds what they hold, and what is the yisod of the plugta. I would leave that, if it's okay with the tzibur, for my 10:30 class, which I call Sanhedrin Be'ir. So, Rabbi, let's start the new sugya now and make sure we're all in the same place. And it begins with the words ki asa. So let's see where it is on the page. If anybody has a siman, ki asa ravdimi. Where is it?
Nine lines up from the.
How many lines up from the wide lines?
Nine?
So nine lines up from the wide lines. The first one line is be'edusohu. And we're up to ki asa ravdimi. Okay. Now, if you recall, we had a statement earlier of Rabbi Yochanan. And Rabbi Yochanan explained that the Machlokas Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim is about whether or not the litigant is called a Nogea, a Nogea V'Eidus. So the Gemara now tells us the following story. Ki asa Ravdimi. Ravdimi came from Eretz Yisrael, and he was one of the two main students of Rabbi Yochanan Eretz Yisrael, who would come to Bavel on a frequent basis and bring quotes from Rabbi Yochanan. There was Ravdimi and Ravdimi. So Ravdimi comes, Omar, and he says in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Machlokes b'shtei kitei edim. This is going to throw a whole nother, shed a whole nother light, or put the whole machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Chacham into a different perspective. There are two kitei edim. In other words, we're back to Reuven. Reuven is the plaintiff, and Reuven claims that he has two different sets of witnesses who can testify on his behalf and establish that Shimon owes him 1,000. Again, both of these pairs of witnesses are testifying on the same loan, but he's got two pairs of witnesses. We'll have to see exactly whether they say exactly the same thing. It could be one pair of witnesses was one set of witnesses were there at the time that Shimon received $1,000 from Reuven as a loan. Maybe the other pair of Edom heard Shimon admit that he owes Reuven 1,000, whatever it is. But Reuven has now, according to his own claim, he has two pairs of witnesses to support his, as evidence to support his claim against Shimon, that Shimon borrowed and owes $1,000. Now, what is the issue that comes to the fore? What happens if these two pairs of witnesses, which Reuven claims he has, you know, he has them in his back, two back pockets. He's got, in his right pocket, he has two witnesses, and in his left pocket, he has another two witnesses. What happens now if he doesn't bring these two sets of witnesses simultaneously? At stage number one, he only brought one set of witnesses. Let's say he digs into his right pocket and he subpoenas two witnesses. Now, Shimon, the defendant, together with some other person, testifies against these two witnesses that they are psulim, that they are disqualified. Okay.
The first or the second set?
Again, right now at this point there's only one set. Meaning the Reuven came into Beis Din, he says, you know, I got two sets of witnesses. I got one in my back pocket on the right side, one in my back pocket on the left side. Where are we now? Now the first set of these two witnesses comes into Beis Din. And we said that this is the set on his right pocket. So that's all we have right now. Where's the other set? You know, they're right now they're on the sidelines. They haven't come into Beis Din yet. Comes along Rav Meir, and he says that in this case, the litigant, we'll call him Shimon, the defendant, could join up with someone else and disqualify these two witnesses. Why? Because mimonafshach. There's no negia in this Eidus whatsoever. Why? Because since Reuven claims he has another pair of Eidim, so even in the absence of the first pair of Eidim, what I mean by absence, I don't mean literally that they didn't show up. They showed up and they're testifying. But even if we knock them out of the ballpark and we disqualify them, that doesn't have any impact on Reuven at all. Why? Because Reuven has another pair of witnesses. But wait a second, what happens if Reuven doesn't succeed in bringing these second pair of witnesses? You know, he's a big shot and he's been yelling with a foghorn, I have another pair of witnesses in my left pocket, but where are they? Or even if they come, maybe there's going to be a problem with those witnesses. So let's try to understand, what is Rav Meir thinking here when he says, let the litigant, meaning the defendant Shimon, disqualify the first pair of Eidim, and there's no loss to Reuven whatsoever, because Reuven has the second pair of Eidim. What do you mean there's no loss? Sure there's a loss. In event that Reuven doesn't successfully bring the second pair of Eidim, then you've now disqualified the first pair of Eidim, on the basis of whose testimony? The litigant himself, the defendant Shimon himself? Certainly he's a Nogei of Eidus. So this tradition that Rav Dimi brought in the name of Rav Yochanan from Eretz Yisrael doesn't seem to make any sense. So the Gemara answers, the Rabbi Meir Savart Sarech Levarer. So if you want to underline those two words, we're going to have a lot to speak about on those two words, Sarech Levarer. Those words mean the following. I'm going to tell you what they mean in this particular case, and then I'll tell you what they mean in general. In this particular case, Tzarech Levar means that Reuven's claim will only be meaningful against Shimon if he brings in the second pair of witnesses. If he doesn't bring in the second pair of witnesses, then his entire claim goes down the tubes, and he has no power to force Shimon to pay. That's called Tzarech Levar. Let's talk about Tzarech Levar in a general sense. Tzarech Levar in a general sense means the following. When a litigant sues someone in a Jewish court of law, the first question we're going to ask that litigant, the judges are going to investigate the litigant after the litigant puts forth his claim, and they're going to ask him to substantiate the claim. What evidence do you have to sue Shimon for payment? Now that's a critical moment in the life of Reuven. as far as his ability to sue in a court of law.
A pretrial?
What would you say? Is there a dramatic, poetic word we could use for a moment that's absolutely critical in your life? You know, it's a do or die moment. You know what I'm saying? What? Is there? Can we? Any of you gentlemen have a PhD in English literature? There must be a phrase in English literature for, you know, that you have to make a split second decision, and everything depends upon what you do at that specific second in time.
On the precipice.
So now, Beis Din turns to Reuven. He says, "Reuven, you claim that Shimon owes you $1,000. What evidence do you have?" So Reuven's a big shot. He says, "I have X and Y. I have like all this evidence." Be careful, Reuven, because that is a critical moment. The very second that you declare you have this evidence, A, B, and so forth and so on, then your claim will stand or fall on the basis of that evidence.
Because if he felt that he could have proved his case with one set of witnesses, he wouldn't have had to say, "I have several."
I don't know. Maybe, Jerry, maybe you're right. I think it's a little bit more complicated than that, but if that makes sense for you, fine. But I'm just saying, Tzorech Levarer, those two words in Rabbi Meir's mouth mean the following. Once the claimant tells Beis Din that I have evidence, we'll call it A plus B, even if A would be independently reliable and B would be independently reliable and sufficient, nevertheless, he has committed himself to A plus B. And if he won't succeed in bringing the whole gamut of whatever came out of his own mouth, then his entire case falls to the wayside. That's called Tzorech Levarer. We'll see that the Chachamim rejected that principle, but that was Rabbi Meir's principle. So now, Rabosai, the disqualification of the first pair of witnesses is irrelevant. Why does it become irrelevant? Because unless Reuven can prove his case with the second pair of witnesses, he loses the case automatically, ipso facto. He forfeits the case because Tzorech Levarer means you said you had two pairs of witnesses. Well, where's the second pair? Now, if he has to bring in the second pair, then Mimarashah. If the second pair are reliable and they pass all the interrogations and all the examinations of Beis Din, then Reuven's going to win the case. If, on the other hand, the second pair of Edom turn out to be unreliable for whatever reason, and I can give you a dozen different possible reasons, then Reuven forfeits the case. So, in effect, Reuven loses zero, he loses nothing, by disqualifying the first pair of Edom. In other words, the disqualification of the first pair of Edom causes absolutely zero loss to Reuven. So let's go over this. Shimon is now testifying against the first pair of Edom. We're at Shlav Aleph. In other words, right now, you know, Reuven dug into his right pocket and he produced his first pair of Edom. And Shimon, the defendant, together with someone else from the street, testifies against those two Edom that they are disqualified. Says Rabbi Meir, this is not Nogea B'Edus. Why? Because the status of the first pair of Edom is irrelevant. Even if you disqualify them, nothing in effect has changed as far as Reuven's situation vis-a-vis his claim. Why? Because Reuven must, absolutely must bring in the second pair of Edom. And Mimonoshah, no matter how you cut the cake. If the second pair of Edom, for whatever reason, are disqualified, then Reuven forfeits the case. That's called Tzorech Levarer. And if the second pair of Edom, on the other hand, are reliable, they pass all the examinations and all the interrogations, then Reuven will collect his $1,000 from Shimon. So, in effect, Shimon, by disqualifying the first pair of Edom, has not changed a thing. He hasn't even made a dent in the case. And therefore, he's not Nogea B'Edus. Did anybody get this? I mean, again, there's a lot of mathematics here. I worked very hard on this.
But that's only quoted Chachamim, then.
Well, we're not up to Chachamim yet. The Chachamim hold ain't Tzorech Levarer. The Chachamim hold that even if at the end of the day Reuven will not successfully bring in the second pair of Edom, it doesn't matter. Reuven can win the case with either one of these two pairs of Edom. So it's critical for Reuven that first pair of Eidim be acceptable, because Reuven doesn't know what's going to be down the line, and maybe down the line we'll invalidate the second pair of Eidim. So Reuven desperately needs the first pair of Eidim. He doesn't need the second pair of Eidim. And now you can accept the testimony of the litigant or the defendant himself to disqualify that first pair of Eidim. But let's go back to Rabbi Meir, because again, everything that we've been learning for the last couple of days is really focused on making some sense about Pei Kadosh. How could Rabbi Meir have said such a thing that the litigant could disqualify the witnesses of the plaintiff? How could that be? He's an Ogei B'Eidus. The answer is, I have a case, says Rabbi Yochanan, where Rabbi Meir is right, Lishitaso, according to his own opinion of Tzarech Levarer, that there's no psul of the Ogei B'Eidus, that the defendant is not in any way benefiting by testifying to disqualify the first pair of Eidim. Why? Because since A, Reuven, the plaintiff, has claimed that he has two pairs of Eidim, and B, Tzarech Levarer means that unless he brings in the second pair of Eidim, his case is completely lost. And C, if he does bring in the second pair of Eidim, then he could win the case simply hands down based on the second pair of Eidim. Therefore, says Rabbi Meir, the defendant, in this case we'll call him Shimon, is not an Ogei B'Eidus when he disqualifies the first pair of Eidim, because that doesn't even make a dent, a ripple in Reuven's case. Reuven's case will be won or lost based on the second pair of Eidim. So even if the first pair of Eidim are disqualified, it's irrelevant, because even had the first pair of Eidim been qualified, that wouldn't win the case for Reuven. What would win the case for Reuven? Both. Only if what?
Both
the second.
Right. That's what Rameh is saying.
Both.
No, I understand what Rameh is saying, that once you say, I have two kat Eidim, you have to present both katim. Maybe one of them is no good, that's okay. As long as you have a second one, it's okay. But you still have to have both of them presented. And since you have to have both of them presented, if Shimon disqualifies the first kat, it's not really no gear, because Reuven has to bring the second cat already of has to bring it. That's okay. What he's saying. So that
can't disqualify the second one, but in accepting the first one, because the second one he is no gear to his
sure. You can't say a word about the second
one. The first one,
right? Because according to Rameh, the litigant said, I'm going to bring both. I have two.
Why can't Reuven disqualify the second set?
I mean Shimon, whatever.
Oh, Shimon.
Had he not testified, he would lose the case. Now, through his testimony.
I see.
So I just want to read to you a summary of Rashi's pshat here in Rabbi Meir. Rashi says the following. Afim namin lifsol asa'edim, even if we accept the testimony of the litigant, again, when I say the litigant, I'm referring to Shimon, the defendant, and someone else from the shuk. Even if we accept that testimony, but adayin lo yu lebal din shteki te'edim, right? Reuven has not produced his second pair of edim. Now, v'im kain, you might argue, l'chora, if you disqualify the first pair of Eidim, you've made it actually impossible for Reuven to be Mavar Dvarav, because he has to produce two pair of Eidim. Vishuv Yechashu Apostolim Nogeim V'Eidus. Kasav Rashi Shegam Kishinifsel Es Hakata Rishona Adayin Nechshav Shebir Dvarav Kevan Shu Omer Lahavi Shtei Kitos Varehe V'Yom. Wow. So again, his birur means I have to bring two pairs of Eidim. Now, I'm not promising you, Reuven says, that you will accept these two pairs of Eidim. You know, there may be 1,001 technical reasons why you'll disqualify them. Hopefully you'll disqualify only one of these two pairs of Eidim, and you'll accept another pair of Eidim. It doesn't matter which one of the two. But I guarantee you that I will bring four human beings to testify on my behalf. I'll bring these two guys, and they will testify on my behalf. And in order to fulfill his chiyuv birur, Reuven just has to make sure that these two pairs of Eidim come into Beis Din and testify. Now, if the first pair of Eidim is disqualified, and Reuven now brings in the second pair of Eidim, and the second pair of Eidim will qualify, that's fine. We will now force the defendant to pay based on the testimony of the second pair of Eidim, because that unit of Eidim is reliable. And where was the birur? Because because Reuven, the defendant, brought, I'm sorry, the plaintiff brought both pairs of Eidim. So he fulfilled his chiyuv birur. Because all he has to do is to bring them into Beis Din, and that he did. So in effect, according to Rabbi Meir's logic here, when Shimon, the defendant, tags on with someone else and testifies to disqualify the first pair of Eidim, he has not changed Reuven's status vis-a-vis this din one iota at all. Why? Because Mimonavsha. If Reuven is successful in bringing the second pair of Eidim, then Shimon is going to lose the case anyway. And if Reuven can't even produce the second pair of Eidim, then he loses the case. So basically, the leg that Reuven has to stand on in this case is bringing in the second pair of Eidim. For Abonan Savri, let's go back to the Gemara. Eino Sorech Levarer. It's very nice that Reuven was boasting about all his proofs and his evidence, but he doesn't have to absolutely establish with two pairs of Eidim that actually come in to testify. And therefore, Reuven could win the case based on the first pair of witnesses, even if he doesn't succeed in subpoenaing the second pair of witnesses into Beis Din. And therefore, Reuven is clearly an Ogea Be'edus, according to the Chachamim, when he testifies to disqualify the first pair of Eidim. Because in event that Reuven will not successfully bring in the second pair of Eidim, Reuven's case will either stand or fall based on the first pair of Eidim. So we obviously cannot accept the testimony of the defendant himself to disqualify the first pair of Eidim. Says Rabbi Yochanan, to finish this all up, Aval Bekas Achas, if the claim of Reuven from the get-go was that he has one and only one pair of Eidim, with Divrei HaKol, even Rabbi Meir would agree that Eino Yochel Leposlam, that certainly we have to disqualify Shimon as the Nogea B'Eidus if he testifies against this first pair of Eidim, because the Reuven only has one pair of Eidim. Now, according to the Rabbanon, even if Reuven claims he has two pair of Eidim, but it's critical that the first pair of Eidim be accepted, because we may at the end of the day not accept the second pair of Eidim, and as a matter of fact, it could be that the second pair of Eidim disappear into thin air and Reuven never brings the second pair of Eidim. So Reuven's case would now be dependent upon the first pair of Eidim. If there's only one pair of Eidim, then even Rameir would agree that clearly, by disqualifying that one pair of Eidim, Shimon is sparing himself, you know, the payment of this chov. Now, the Gemara is going to quote Amoraim that have a slightly different understanding of the relationship between the first kat and the second kat. Amru lefana. After Rav Dimi presented this tradition in the transmission in the name of Rav Yochanan, so Rav Ami and Rav Asi said the following: Ein sham ela kas achas mahu. What would be the din if there's only one pair of Eidim? So the Gemara doesn't understand the question. Ein sham ela kas achas. If there's only one pair of Eidim, There's no doubt in such a case. So Amit, we already interpreted Rav Dimi as saying that Rabbi Meir only accepts the testimony of the defendant because there are two pairs of Eidim. But if there was only one pair of Eidim, we cannot accept. Even Rabbi Meir agrees he cannot accept it. Aval kasach es divrei HaKol eino yochel leposlam, because if there's only one pair of Eidim, then clearly Rabbi Meir would admit that defendant is nogea b'eidus. Ella, but rather, let's reformulate the question that Rav Ami and Rav Asi raised. Nimtzeis kat shnia krovim opsulim mahu. What happens in the following scenario? The claim of Reuven from the get-go was that he has two pairs of witnesses. And when he brought in the second pair of witnesses, we found, after investigating them, that they were krovim. They were related to each other or to one of the litigants, or psulim. was some sort of other technical psul. Now, Rashi doesn't tell us exactly what that psul was, but whatever it is, we know that they were possible. Now, according to Rabbi Meir, when there are two pairs of Edim, we said that the defendant could passel the first pair of Edim. He's not an Ogeh be'Edus. The Gemara now wants to know, what about the following scenario? In the case where the second pair of Edim turn out to be Krovim or Psulim, and could it be that now the Baal Din himself, in so far as he passeled the first pair of Edim, is an Ogeh be'Edus? Why? Because now Reuven successfully brought in the second pair of Edim. So as far as Beer is concerned, he actually successfully achieved his responsibility, implemented his goal, and he has now two pairs of Edim in front of Bezdin. But now there's a problem, because the second pair of Edim turned out to be Psulim. And if the second pair of Edim turned out to be Psulim, then Reuven's case would now rest upon what?
First pair.
On the first pair of Edim. Well, it's a funny kind of thing, because when Reuven invoked the first pair of Edim at stage number one, we established that the defendant qualifies to passel this pair of Edim, because in any event, Reuven needs desperately the second pair of Edim. We assumed that if Reuven can't bring in the second pair of Edim, he's going to lose the case in any event. And if he does bring in the second pair of Edim, he'll win the case based on the second pair of Edim. But now, as things turns out, he brought in the second pair of Edim, but the second pair of Edim were disqualified. Which means, ipso facto, Reuven's entire case stands or falls based on the first pair of Edim. So how could you have believed the Baal Din, meaning the defendant, we called him Shimon, to testify against the first pair of Edom, when it turns out that Reuven's case now is totally dependent upon the first pair of Edom. He brought in the second pair of Edom, and therefore he fulfilled his requirement of Tzarech Levarer, but that second pair of Edom would not win the case for him, because as it turns out, we established that they were Psulim or Krovim. Now it becomes absolutely clear that Reuven's case stands or falls based on the first pair of Edim. Well, if that be the case, then certainly Shimon, the defendant, in disqualifying this first pair of Edim, was an Ogeh be'Edus. But again, he wasn't really an Ogeh be'Edus at the time that he testified. Do you follow what I'm saying? We, in all naivete, we accepted his testimony to disqualify the first pair of Edim, because we assumed, mimonafshach, either Reuven would bring a second pair of Edim, and therefore we can rely on the second pair of Edim, or if he doesn't bring in the second pair of Edim, then he loses the case, he forfeits the case because of the principle of Tzarech Levarer. Therefore, we went ahead and we accepted the testimony of Shimon, the defendant, together with someone else, to disqualify the first pair of Edim. Well, guess what? As history unfolds, it turns out that Reuven's claim is totally dependent upon the first pair of Edim. And now by disqualifying them, Reuven loses the case and Shimon wins the case. How can you accept Shimon's testimony? But again, if you look at it, you know, there are different frames of time. You know, if you look at time T1, when Shimon testified against the first pair of Edim, it looked like to us, it appeared like, he's not an Ogeh be'Edus. But later on, after we accepted his testimony, and now Reuven invokes the second pair of Edim, and it turns out that they're unreliable, Shimon was an Ogeh be'Edus, because by disqualifying the first pair of Edim, he wins the case. Amar lahem kvar he'idu Edim rishonim. We cannot change history. We can't go back into a time machine. Meaning, at the moment that Shimon testified, together with someone else, against these first pair of Edim, we had every reason to accept his Edus. He was not an Ogeh be'Edus at that moment. And therefore we went ahead and we established that the first pair of Edim are psulim. Now we're not going to change it later on and say, well, retroactively, let's disqualify the original Edus HaPoseles of Shimon based on the fact that now it turns out that he is an Ogeh B'Eidus. If he wasn't an Ogeh B'Eidus at the time that he testified, because we assume that either the second pair of Edom are reliable or Reuven doesn't even have the second pair of Edom, then we cannot passel the testimony of Shimon Limafreya. We can't retroactively change the status of his testimony. Once having accepted and relied upon that testimony, we leave things as they are. Ikedi Amri Omer Rav Ashi Kvar Ha'idu Eidim Rishonim. That it was Rav Ashi who said Kvar Ha'idu Eidim Rishonim. So there are two different traditions as to who said those words, Kvar Ha'idu Eidim Rishonim. It was either Rav Ami and Rav Ashi. I'm sorry, it was either Rav Dimi in response to the question of Rav Ami and Rav Ashi, or it was Rav Ashi. But either way, the conclusion is Kvar Ha'idu Edim HaRishonim.
This is only according to Rabbi Meir.
This is all within Rabbi Meir, correct? Because again, according to the Chachamim, there's no way we could have even accepted them, because the claim of Reuven it could be one, right? And this we knew from the get-go based on the first pair of Edim, because there's no Chiyuv of Birur. It was only according to Rabbi Meir that we accepted the testimony to passel the first pair of Edim, even though it was the defendant himself who was part of that unit. And the reason for that was because Rabbi Meir holds Tzarech Levarech. And if Tzarech Levarech means that Reuven's case will depend upon bringing the second pair of Edim, and Mimonavshach, either he'll successfully bring in two pair of Edim that are acceptable, that are reliable, or he won't. And then he loses the case. And now it turns out that although Reuven did bring in the second pair of Edim, it turns out that they were disqualified. And now, Lemafreya, we understand retroactively that Reuven's case stands or falls based on the first pair of Edim. But at the time that Shimon, the defendant, testified to passel the first pair of Edim, we assumed that he was not Nogeh B'Eidus. Now it turns out that history reveals and sheds a new light that he was an Nogeh B'Eidus. Kfar Eidu HaRishonim. We accepted that Edim, and we're not going to rescind that aid.
This only applies if the second set is brought in later, after the first set's been disqualified. If both sets come in at the same time, right? And now I forget who's there.
So wait one second. But what would Rabbi Meir say? You're asking, Don, if both sets of Edom came
into the court at the same time,
right? So now Reuven has fulfilled his obligation of what?
Of
Tzarech Levarech, right. And now the question is, which of these two pairs of witnesses would be acceptable? So that you're right, in such a scenario, if the defendant wants to knock off one of these two pair of Edim, he's really reducing the probability, so to speak, the statistical probability of Reuven winning the case. So then he would be an Ogeh B'Eidus,
and he couldn't do it,
and we would not accept his testimony.
Okay.
I'm going to think about that again, when I'm a little bit less pressured, because I see the time has gone, so we want to end here. If anyone's available at 10:30, we'll have an inshit to try to figure out what Nogeh B'Eidus is all about and come to grips on this machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chacham.
Nogeh B'Eidus, if you had to translate it, I mean, in art school it says partial testimony, but you're using it as if it's a noun.
Oh, partial.
But you're using it as if it's a noun. Nogeh B'Eidus.
Nogeh B'Eidus means he has vested interests. Now, what he means by partiality is that he's partial because he wants to gain whatever he wants to gain through this.
Partial in that sense of the word.
The word partial has two meanings.
Yes, I know.
Do a study if those two meanings are related to each other. I don't know. But partial could mean half or something. The partial could mean I'm partial
prejudice.
Towards prejudice.
Exactly.
Right, exactly.
Okay, I misunderstood the definition.
Dr. A meant prejudice, not half or something.
Okay.